Good morning. Welcome to the Senate Education Committee. Today is Friday, March 23rd. The time is about 8:10. In attendance thus far is Co-Chair Thomas and myself, Senator Meyer, and we do expect Senator French and Davis shortly. So I want to welcome those of us who are here. And today we're going to be hearing from Diane Maples and Kathy LeCompte. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Okay. That's right.
All right, and they're both with the Alaska Tech Prep Consortium. Senator Thomas and myself had a chance to meet with both these folks back in March, as other folks probably have as well. And we thought their organization was very, very good, and the presentation was well and interesting and very relevant to what we've been talking about, especially with the both technical education initiatives. So, Senator Thomas, Co-Chairman Thomas, and myself, we extend the invitation to have him speak to the committee. I wish we had more of the committee here, but I think they will be showing up as we progress. And so, in interest of time, I'm going to just turn the meeting over to you and let you go through the presentation. And why don't we take up questions and towards the end?
Okay.
So with that, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We appreciate this opportunity to share this with you. We've been working on this project for quite a long time, and you'll hear about that in our presentation. And I'm Kathy. I'm a member of the board of directors of the consortium, and the consortium is made up of over 40 school districts and post-secondary institutions and business and industry. And this is Diane Maples.
And I'm the...
Sorry. need my glasses.
I get that. I get that.
We understand.
Yeah.
My name is Diane Maples, and I'm the statewide tech prep coordinator for the Alaska Tech Prep Consortium. Been in Alaska for about 11 years. Seven of those years, I was teaching in Hoonah, Dillingham, and Valdez, and came into this position with some experience having the tech prep process, actually being able to touch it and model it and put it in place into the classroom, into the district, and thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning.
And in my other life, I am at the Community and Technical College at UAA. I'm Associate Dean of Academic Affairs there, so I'm on the post-secondary side. And we work with our secondary partners to align curriculum in our tech prep model. So this is one of my favorite slides, and I just wanted to share it with you to start with, because this story that we're telling you today is really about finding those arrows that are flying around crazy and linking and leveraging and aligning them to fly straight, because there are pockets of greatness in this state happening in secondary and post-secondary partnerships, in small communities, large communities, and the process that we've been through since last June has been all about this, finding these arrows and getting them to fly straight. I wanted to give you just a brief history of the tech prep in Alaska in case you were unfamiliar with the organization. In 2004, there were a bunch of arrows flying around, and the Department of Labor and the Department of Education and the university got together and said, we need to get these flying straight and get better alignment between our secondary and post-secondary education systems. And so these three organizations came together and wrote a grant to the Carl Perkins Funds and received that grant to start the consortium. That is represented by many school districts and post-secondary folks. And they came together to align what was happening already organically, because we worked very well together in this state in pockets. Systemically, still a challenge, but in pockets. I was in Ketchikan for 11 years, and I was campus director down there, and we worked very well with our high school down there. So I know that things are going on in communities all over. So this is the consortium in a nutshell. It basically works to line up sequence of courses in a career pathway that a student can start in high school. So they take a course in high school that's aligned with a course in the university. They get post-secondary credit, so they get the university credit while they're still in high school. And then the key, and this is the key piece when you talk about transferability, the key piece is the course that they take actually counts towards a degree or a certificate. It's not just an elective or it's a nice-to-have college credit. It's actually part of a career pathway. And that's the unique part about the Alaska Tech Prep. And over the past, well, since 2007, we've had 35,000 credit hours taken by high school students. And when we did the math, that was about $3.5 million in savings of tuition, because a high school tech prep course is $25 a credit versus a university course, which is around 140-something these days. So
because the high school teacher is teaching that course. So we're leveraging our, you know, basically leveraging that resource in the classroom.
And as important as that is for our kids, another piece of that that's important is you're getting secondary teachers and post-secondary instructors together to talk about what do these kids need to be successful at that next step. So there's not only just that alignment with the curriculum, but it's also that college preparation, the readiness for post-secondary education, whether it be for a certificate or whether the kids are going to go on for a baccalaureate degree. They have that conversation, so the teachers in the high school are more aware of what the kids are going to need as they move into that next level of education. So this is the system that we had up until last year when we were looking at our evaluation. We had an evaluation process, and it said we needed to expand. This connection that we were making between secondary and post-secondary teacher was great, but what about the rest of it? What about the math skills? What about the English skills? What about these career pathways? What else can we do for these kids? Because every time you talk to somebody in business and industry, it seems like the conversation eventually comes around to how are we going to replace ourselves? Where are we going to get that new workforce? We need to reach out to the high schools. We need to reach out to post-secondary or the secondary schools. So we decided we wanted to reach out, and we looked around and wanted to pick for our first time out low-hanging fruit. So we looked at the health, because health is a top job in the state. Every community needs health workers. The university had a model of, they call the Allied Health Alliance. It was a group of faculty and folks providing health education at a system level. There were representatives from every major unit in the system. So they've been doing this for 10 years. So we've already got a little alignment going in the university. So we needed to reach out. And there were academies happening in the secondary schools. I mean, all roads led to health. That was the best place for us to start. So we decided that we would reach out to them. Well, when we looked at new models, we wanted to bring together the experts. So we called together a group of folks. There's about 50 people in this picture. This was at the King Career Center. It was a sponsored meeting, so we were able to get folks in that didn't have travel funds. We were able to pay for people to come from all over the state to talk about this. How could we expand what we're doing from course to course to more of a holistic look at a kid's schedule and student's schedule, sorry. But how can we look at that more holistically, not just the career and technical stuff, but the English and the math and the sciences? And then we were introduced to the Alaska Performance Scholarship. Well, how do we get that overlaid so that not only is a student from ninth grade through taking the courses that they need in this career pathway, but they're also taking the courses that are going to get them access to those funds in the Alaska Performance Scholarship. So we brought all these folks together, and we had this day-long meeting, and we talked about the possibilities of what we could do. And what happened was we formed these smaller working groups. And as you can see, the top one, the Program of Study Task Force, that's that big group that you saw in that previous picture. And they came up with these smaller working groups, looking at career exploration, looking at curriculum and delivery models and professional development. And as we started to move through this, other groups started having conversations. The Alaska Association for Career and Technical Education, they started a leadership institute, and that was career and technical education professionals from secondary and post-secondary getting together, getting leadership skills. So they started working in small groups and forming these small groups. And then in November, the Institute of the North got together in Talkeetna, and they had this conversation. And they started forming these small groups. So if you think back to that, arrows, all these arrows were flying around, and they were all starting to fly together. So we brought these groups all together because there was so many crossovers. So it was that linking and leveraging of people doing things but not knowing what everybody else was doing. So we've spent the last 9 months doing that, and I got to tell you, it has been a blast to see what happens when you bring a group of people together who want to make things happen. Things happen. It's just been wonderful. It's been great. So we brought them together and created... We pulled all these groups together, and now what we have is we have this model of small working groups who are looking at these particular topics and expanding every time we get together, reporting on what they've done and then expanding on the work that they've done. So we're building on the assets. Instead of looking at what we don't have and saying, oh, it'll never work, let's look and see where it's working. Let's bring them together, and let's link them together with those that are also doing it. So we're looking at it from a perspective of what's working, and let's make it better. So one of the challenges was, how do we frame this? We need to have some sort of a template, because we've got all these people, we've got them together, but we want to make this real for our students. So how do we do that? So we looked at a national model called Program of Study, and it's been tested, piloted in 6 states. It's a Department of Education and Office of Vocational
Adult OVE.
OVE. Education. Yeah, adult, you know, education. You talk in acronyms so many times you forget what they stand for. So, but it's an education focus, and it's a program of study, and it has all of these components, and this is like the gold standard. Student in the middle, all of these things we talk about, and we make sure that students have access to this. So we're working along with this program of study. And then I go to Washington, D.C. on another grant that I'm working on, Department of Labor, and they present this. And this is the Department of Labor's workforce development model for career pathways, similar to the program of study. They had a panel of folks up there, and they had DOL ETA folks, and they had DOE folks, and they were all working together, we thought. Not so much. There's still problems with connecting the languages. It's language when you talk about workforce development for adults and secondary and post-secondary connection and education. So we get back here and we're scratching our heads and we're going, what are we going to do? And then we come back and we look at our CTE plan. It's like, oh, we've already got it here. Alaska is way ahead of the curve as far as our other partners in the other states and the federal government for that matter, because the university, Department of Labor, and Department of Education got together and wrote this plan. And in this plan are these 6 strategies that bring the education and the workforce together in one place with the students at the center. So we started looking at what we were doing, and we started to make those connections, again, bringing those arrows into that straight line. So here's the first one. Transitions. Make transitions accountable. Well, we're doing that. We have the AKCIS, which is a database, and I just want to tell you a quick story about this. This is my favorite thing. I don't know this database very well, but they're using it for the personal learning and career plans for students from elementary school because it has a career exploration component. My favorite part of this is the reality check. So you set a student down, you set a kid down, and you say, okay, so you want to own a boat? You want to own a house? You want to own a car? So they put in there their lifestyle. Says, okay, well, it's going to cost you this much money to own that stuff. So they get that, and they say, okay, so these are the jobs that you could do if you want to have that much money to own that stuff and have that kind of lifestyle. And this is the level of education that you need to get that job to own that stuff. It's really a fun document. I mean, I'd like to get in and do it and play with it because it just gives a kid a sense of early on, I better keep my grades up. I better think about what that next step is. I actually sat by a man on the plane last night who has a 15-year-old son, and he's 15 years old, and he's going to Stanford. And he knows he's going to need to get good grades, and he's got a vision. But not every kid has that kind of determination. And his dad says, I'm just staying out of the way because he's got his ideas, and he's knowing what he's going to do. And you know, but not every kid has that, so they need that help, and they need it early on. If we wait till high school, it's too late. So this model of using the AKCIS as a personal learning and career plan is already being worked. There's funds out there. Last year, the Department of Labor was given $625,000 for mini grants around the state, and a couple of those grants went to investigate the use of the PLCPs, or the, you know, how can we make PLCPs more available to students in the schools. So that's just one way. There's a list of things on here, and you can read that, and in your handouts there's more detailed information. But that's just one way that we've connected the CTE plan with what is already happening for kids. The second is the curriculum alignment. And this is exciting for me as a university person to see what's happening in our curriculum as a transition tool project, which is also a CTE grant-funded project. What that project is doing, it's bringing faculty together at the university to talk about aligning 5 health courses that a student could access from any high school in any major unit in the state. So I'll just give you an example. At the University of Alaska Anchorage, we have a medical terminology or medical technology associate's degree or certificate. If a kid in Ketchikan who lives down in the southeast region takes a tech prepped medical terminology course, if they want to go to UAS, not a problem, because that aligns with UAS. But sometimes, if they don't want to go to UAS and they want to go to UAA because that's where their career path is, sometimes it's not a problem and sometimes it is a problem because they're met with, gee, this is nice, we'll use it as an elective. Our goal with this model, this project for aligning the curriculum, is to get those five courses good at any campus. So a kid anywhere in any village, any community school who has a tech prep degree, medical terminology, has a choice of any of the MAUs in the system. So no easy task, but we're working on it. And what's beautiful about this, and this is where I get excited, is that we've got a process and we've got a strategy. And we know how much it costs, and we know what it takes. So now when this is all done, we've taken this money, this grant money, leveraged this project, we can say, okay, we've done five health courses, now what? Oh, welding. Let's go to welding. Now we know what the process is. We've got to get the faculty together. They've got to hash it out. They've got to talk about it. Welding. Now what's next? So we can apply it in different places. Slowly and incrementally, we're going to make those transitions and that curriculum lined up so that students have an easier path and not run into barriers. The third is the delivery models. Again, I'll just quickly touch on one that's one of my favorites, is the Alaska Learning Network. I think you're probably familiar with that group. We've been partnered with them because when you're looking holistically at a student's schedule and they're living in a community that doesn't have all the courses that are on that schedule, particularly the ones that make them eligible for the Alaska Performance Scholarship, our friends and partner at Alaska Learning Network can fill in those blanks. So this one, the fourth one, is recruit, support, and develop high-quality CTE teachers. I touched a little bit earlier on the Leadership Institute. I'm the instructor of record for that Leadership Institute, and I've been working with 15 career and technical education professionals from around the state, connecting them. They've developed a model for a website that they can put best practices. So a teacher that's working out in this community or this village has a best practice for teaching math in CTE. So they use, like, and this is my own personal experience, geometry, rise and run. Oh, that's how you build stairs. That was an epiphany for me when I was in geometry many, many years ago. So when they get those best practices, there'll be a place on that collaborative website where they can share that information between each other. And it also gives them the sense that they're not alone. You know, sometimes you're by yourself in this small district and you're the only CTE teacher there. It's like, oh, I wish I could talk to somebody about this issue. And so now we've built this network of CTE professionals through this Alaska Association of Career and Technical Education professional organization. The fifth one is facilities, and we tend to think of buildings when we think of facilities, but I've pushed the envelope to technology infrastructure because, again, you're out in a small community, you don't have access to all the courses that you need. They're available online. And so getting that technology infrastructure so those students have that access is really key and critical. And we've been partnered with the
BTOP,
which is
Broadband Technology
something something. Anyways, basically it's taking broadband technology out to Western Alaska, Dillingham, Bethel. They're just about ready to flip the switch in Bethel and turn on that broadband. That is going to open up so many more possibilities for those kids and the university and everybody else in that community. So we've been working with them so that when the switch goes on, we have some courses that we can deliver. And we have a group of folks in another one of those CTE grants that are working on developing CPR for distance. They have the resuscitator connected to a computer so it can tell what you're doing, if you're doing it right or doing it wrong, and it comes up on a computer, and it doesn't matter where the teacher is. You can have resuscitator out in the bush, and you can have the teacher in Anchorage, and they can see how it's all working. So you doing this, can you see how much fun this is? All this innovation and all this stuff, it's just a blast. And then the last one is funding, of course. We are looking at, right now, working with our partners in braiding funding. everybody comes to the table with a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, and we make it work. We are waiting to hear on a request that we made to the university for funding. There was a funding line in the region's budget that didn't make it out of the governor's budget and then didn't make it into this new round of budget amendments, and it was for the tech prep. And it was in the region's budget. This was the third time. And to get into that budget, it gets vetted through all of the institution. So it wasn't like we were, you know, being totally rogue, but we did go directly to the funding source at the university and ask for that directly to see if they could find it in the general fund. So we're still waiting to hear about that. But we are encouraged and hopeful that by bringing so many people to the table that we will be able to braid together the funding to now take this out into some communities. So we got together this last Tuesday with this group of core team members, and everybody's been working and we're pulling all this stuff together, and somebody said, well, what about the student experience? And we all looked at her and said, good question, let's put that up on the board and figure that out. So we put the student experience up on the board, and this is what we came up with. What needs to happen along this student's path, and what are the questions that they ask? And that's what this slide is about. And this is still a work in progress. We're all getting back together again in May because we're ready now to take these resources that we've pulled together and make it real for kids in a region. But these are the questions that kids ask along the line. What might I be interested in? What K-12 classes do I need to take? How can I access them? And what about my extracurricular life and experiences? What do I need to do or not do that will help me move to that next step? And what work or experiences do I need? Where can I go job shadow or get some work-based learning? So these are the questions that kids ask along the way. And then along the bottom there are all the things that are going to support those questions and answer those questions. So we have this overlap now of the working groups. So it continues to be connected. That honeycomb now becomes more of a web and the students in the center. And now we're ready to take this and go to a community and bring the stakeholders and the partners together and make this real for kids, because we believe we have enough of the resources to do that. So now what we're doing is partnering even stronger with the Alaska Health Workforce Coalition. Remember at the beginning of our presentation we talked about health being the low-hanging fruit, if you will. Well, we've got the Workforce Investment Board with their coalition and the action agenda, and we are the Engage and Prepare Alaskan Youth for Health Careers. So now we have the industry engagement, we have secondary and post-secondary, and we're working together to develop this program of study, and we're just about there, June of 2012, and now we need to figure out how to implement this, and we're looking to do it in three different regions, but the more this gets out, the more Diane's phone is ringing, principal's calling, I want to be a part of this. This sounds great, I want to be a part of it. So we're ready to take this out and make it real for our students. So what's it going to take to succeed? It's going to take somebody who gets up every morning and says, what are the experiences of our students in accessing career and technical education? How's that going today? We've got a lot of people that care. We don't have just one person, but that's all they care about. That's everything, and it's our students. We're looking for funds to support that person and some leadership in the regions to take on this model and help us make this real for our kids. How was that? 20 minutes, huh?
Yeah, it was great, yeah.
And I didn't talk too fast, I hope.
And in your folder, what we did was we put three of the slide handouts, the program of study with the elements that we have developed, some sub-components that will help us identify and develop a checklist. And then here's the six key elements that Kathy referenced at the Department of Labor mm-hmm. meeting when she went to Washington, D.C., and then I just added in the CTE plan strategies as a...
Just an overview of the CTE strategy plan.
And then on the right-hand side, we're just kind of a reiteration of our talking points. We did make a few changes. At the bottom, we looked at, you know, what is the return on investment to the state and to our students? So as Kathy referenced earlier, you know, just tech prep alone, what she just presented is bigger than tech prep. Tech prep is one component, but tech prep alone saved the state $3.5 million in the last few years.
Actually, saved the kids and their parents.
And their parents. Thank you. And then, you know, just kind of a reiteration about linking and leveraging our, this is what it's really about, is linking and leveraging our school resources, our teachers, the good things that we have already going on in the state. And so you can read that for yourself, but I just wanted to make reference to it. The folder actually just gives a, is just one of the tools. We've actually put out about 13,000 this year. It's kind of a high request for the folders because it gives one example of a personal learning career plan that aligns with ACCESS, the program, state program that Kathy referenced. You'll see on the back, it looks at 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, and so these are being handed out in middle school. But again, it's just another tool for students to think early on, you know, what are my opportunities? How do I, you know, make that next step? What does it look like? What do I want to do? The questions that Kathy referenced as far as the types of questions that students ask. And, you know, kind of a checkoff, you know, am I meeting my graduation requirements? How am I doing on the typical testing? You know, where's AccuPlacer or, you know, readiness test, if you will, college readiness test, 11th grade, you know, am I there? Do I need some additional help to be successful in that level of math or English, the Alaska Performance Scholarship requirement? I mean, it's just kind of a checkoff, and so it's just one of those additional tools.
Great. Is that the... That's your presentation?
It is the presentation, and we have questions. I just have one thing, though, that I wanted to add before we close. One of the interesting things that has happened by approaching this from an asset base, what do we have? What can we do better? You can get great results out of small amounts of money. Having a big amount of money would be great, but having small amounts of money. And I haven't kept track of the budget for the CTE funds that, like, they were given last year, the $625 that was given last year. I can tell you that the funds that we accessed have leveraged great things to happen. So if there's, you know, if this is my pitch for that line item in the budget, if it's there, that investment that you made last year in that CTE fund for those small grants to go out to the state, I know in our case, have gotten great results. So just let you know that a little bit of money, when you look at the glass half full, makes a huge difference.
Sure. Now, that was that in the universities?
No, I think it was the Department of Labor. I can't remember where that line
came
from.
It came out of Department of Labor.
It's managed at the AWIB level.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Our partner Jeff Selvey and the AWIB and Marsh Olson down there now are over there. So,
remember that group?
Yes.
So, anyways.
Okay.
Well, just want to say that.
Yeah, and Senator Thomas has a question for you. Just one question I have is, I know you met, both of you met with Senator Thomas and myself. Have you met with other legislators on this idea, this topic, and what's been the feedback or response?
So we met with Senator Davis to begin with just a couple weeks ago, steered us to Senator Thomas's office, and she was excited to hear that we were also going to meet with you and felt like this was a great, she suggested that we bring up, you know, the opportunity to present to the Education Committee.
We met with Representative Dick's staff.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. And he's co-chair of the House Education.
He's the House.
Or he is the chair of the House.
House mm-hmm. Education,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and his interest would probably be more on the rural side of things mm-hmm. and what you're doing out in rural Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you're doing a lot of good things out there. Now, this distance learning, the Alaska Learning Network, whatever we call that, where they take these classes online to mm-hmm. meet the performance scholarship, is that working pretty well? And are most of the classes offered that are needed, as far as you know, to meet the Alaska Performance Scholarship?
I, you know what? Actually,
with your permission, could we?
Okay.
Could we call on Roxy Moran?
She's sure.
She is the one in the know about this.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Well, no, pull the chair there. Pull the chair.
Okay.
There you go.
For the record, I'm Roxy Moran. I'm with the State Department of Education and Early Development, and I am the Grant Administrator for Alaska's Learning Network.
Okay.
So to answer your question simply. Yes, it has the capacity to offer any classes.
We need to get you on a microphone there.
Do you want me to do that again?
Yep, try it again.
Okay.
Yeah.
For the record, I'm Roxy Morant. I'm with the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development, and I am the Grant Administrator for Alaska's Learning Network. So we've been partnering together And the simple answer is yes, it has the capacity to offer the classes needed by districts. Currently, many of those courses are purchase courses, and we're working to develop Alaska courses by Alaska teachers for Alaska students.
Okay, great. Well, that was always been, thank you. That was one of the concerns about the Alaska Performance Scholarship, was just making sure everybody had equal access to the class. Senator Thomas, a question?
I had a couple. Thank you, Mr.
Sure.
Chairman. And one was just answered because I looked at the makeup of the board, and I wondered where the Department of Education was, because ultimately they will be the ones that, you know, need to be very supportive of the money that's being looked at. It might be Department of Labor at some point, but you're talking about some pretty small money there. The university has their own issues, and both the university and the Department of Labor's budgets are closed out, so you can check today and see, probably with my office or Kevin's, Senator Meyer's office, where that money may stand. But, you know, as we look at things, we find the disconnect very early on, and I was glad to see that you do have at least some reference to students in the K-5 career awareness mm-hmm. and exploration, which I think is extremely important, because as I heard you talk about things before I focused on that, I was thinking that we may be focusing past some point in time where a lot of students will be missed. They will be failing in elementary school and then into junior high, and by the time they get into high school, they're pretty, I wouldn't say it's impossible to retrain and get them cranked up, but it's much more difficult than at least stressing some of the concerns or needs, I guess is a better word, in elementary school. So that was more a comment. And then the virtual classes, we had NACTEC here. I don't know how familiar you are with them, but the comment that the director of that group had, that school anyhow had, was that they had implemented a virtual welding class, and that when most of the people came in and actually did their first welding, it was unbelievable. And of course, welding is not a cheap class to teach, of course. There are a variety that are not cheap because of the consumables that are used and things like that. So hopefully you're able to, you know, merge those types of programs or consider those kind of programs as well, particularly in rural areas where the teaching of those kind of classes are even much more expensive because you have to ship everything out there much further distances, fly things in and that kind of thing, rather than transported by rail or mm-hmm. truck. So, and I don't know if I have any other questions. I appreciate what you're doing. I think it's extremely important. One thing, of course, we don't want to do is lead parents to believe that we're channeling their kids, you know, that we're giving them an opportunity, but we are not making decisions for them that, oh, your son or your daughter is not going to make it in college, so we're kind of steering them this way. But the idea that the plenty of information is available for parents as well as the kids to understand just exactly what you're doing, what it takes to become successful in that particular occupation or profession. So,
and if I can make a comment to that, you know, I think that's a well-spoken statement. You know, the value that I saw when I initially came in as an educator into the tech prep world was it provided students the opportunity to take this credit, this aligned course, not only to the university but to the regional training centers and into apprenticeships. It's not a there's a lot of work to be done in both of those areas, but we do have partnerships with Department of Labor for that purpose, to provide those opportunities. And NACTEC is one of our partners. But it's a more of a holistic view of providing the framework, if you will, for students to be able to identify early, I'd like to kind of pursue this pathway, and these are the opportunities, and I can come in and out of the system. I can take some college, and I can take it over here to the regional training center, finish my certification, go to work for a while, come back to the university, continue on, become a manager, complete a bachelor's. It provides that framework and that support for students so they don't have to figure it out. It's already there. We've done the work for them.
And if I may?
Sure. Go ahead.
Along the same lines of what I was talking about, the concept of getting kids better aware of what the needs are going to be for them to be successful. I think that's really key. And I don't know if your program focuses more on looking at what are the the occupations that are coming on, you know, more the current, I'm sure it will be broader than that, but, and then concentrating on, as you said, the health care on one of your handouts here.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, so if you're, I guess the question is more, are you concentrating on that versus the general concept of what it takes to be successful, which if you're not, that's fine, but the information that you're gathering I think would be helpful as you find how ill-prepared the kids are in high school to help force down the concept of what you're doing to the lower grades, I think would be helpful, because we find in a lot of cases not much documentation or statistics are actually kept on some things that are extremely important to make the decisions of what needs to take place.
Yes, and just using that personal career and learning plan for kids as early as grade school gives them the opportunity to do that exploration and to get it in their hands and in their parents' hands through whatever mechanism is possible. Often a teacher or a principal will be very engaged in that that model using the database, the electronic version, and then they move on to another community. So our idea is looking at that circle there with the student in the middle, bringing the people in the community in the region around the student to fulfill those needs. And it could be pastor in a church, it could be a Girl Scout leader that knows how to use the access and works with the kids to give them access so that they can have that. What would it look like to do this? And using the pathway within the cluster model is another piece that we're doing. So you have in the health, for example, and we're using health because it's tangible, we could make the connections and we could build the template and move it into construction or move it into another field. So there's a lot of opportunity for health careers. And it may be the student starts down a path and they think they want to be this, and then they get there and they're, not so much. What else can I do with what I've already taken? So they just kind of shift gears a little bit within that cluster. And it really is a great model, because if a kid decides they want to be an engineer and they get into ANSEP, which is a wonderful program, they get into ANSEP and then they get along the path and then they decide that that's not so much, but they've got all this great STEM training and education and they got some engineering going on. What else in that cluster is available for them to do if they don't want to take it to that level? So using those career clusters and those pathways within those clusters is all part of this as well.
And if I could just add, I'm going to go back to that framework. Right now, without a framework, we have a lot of, as Kathy referenced earlier, we have a lot of great things going on in Alaska, and in some places I think we lead the nation. However, without linking and leveraging those resources, we continue to work so often in the silos, and then kids kind of fall off the crack. They don't get the advising and counseling that you might be referencing. They may not get the strategies to help them be supported in math and English until it's too late, and they're already leaving high school and considering going to college. Now they need remedial classes, or they can't even pass the exams that they need in order to be successful at the regional training center. So this framework, when modeled, even though we're focusing on health, as the initial one, what it could look like, for example, in any community, is a kind of like a checklist. Do we have agreements between the partners? Do we have, you know, policies, school board policies in place that help support the process? Do we have the courses? Do we have, you know, and where we don't, it's a gap analysis for looking, okay, as Kathy referenced earlier, who does around the state that we can connect and help support that? So again, a student doesn't fall off because next year the teacher's gone and that class is no longer available, and they're totally sold out to health or construction or whatever. Or the academy, that it's no longer, they can't fund it next year. Or it's no longer for whatever. I mean, the list goes on, and yet this is a strategy for helping us put it all together for the student and help that student be successful.
There was one more thing I just wanted to reference. I'm sorry that we keep going on here, but, you know, pictures prompt thought, and this is a new visual that we just created, because we wanted to show how a student progresses along the path, and it's connected, and that's the perfect world. But in reality, between 5 and 6, between 8 and 9, between 12 and 13, and then between 16 in the workforce, there are places where kids and students can fall off the rail because of a lack of preparation. So one of the things that came out in our last discussion that we're really going to look at is There's two questions that we want to answer at these transition points. And it is, what do I need to know to be successful at that next step, and do I know it? And the what do I need to know happens way before that transition piece, but then you get to that transition and you say, do I know what I need to know to be successful at that next level? So managing those transition points keeps this a smooth and connected pathway. The other pictures that we've had gaps between there, and it prompted my thought that this is so connected, that this is the vision.
Well, no, this has been great, because I know we had President Gamble here Monday, and we were talking about proper counseling, for our high school students and even in college, to get them prepared, and then also as far as transferring classes, like you mentioned, from UAF to UAS to UAS to UAA, it should all just be automatic. And even President Gamble mentioned that that's his goal, is to make sure that wherever you take a class in the university system, that it's all compatible. And that was a frustration, I think, that you mentioned. And he's addressed that. Senator Thomas and I both have had bills this session dealing with full technical education. Again, Senator Thomas's bill had to do with counseling on those particular courses, and mine had to do with allowing these courses to be offered as early as junior high, which is what you're talking about.
Thank you.
And President Mayor Sullivan was talking about his education summit that he's been putting on in Anchorage, and how they're kind of modeling the Finland approach, where again, by junior high, they kind of know which kids are going to go the vocational education route, which ones are going to go be a doctor, engineer, whatever. So all this is very timely and very helpful. But as you mentioned, I believe, Kathy, that there are all sorts of arrows flying all over the place, and we need to make sure they're heading in the same directions, because there is limited resources for this program. Now, this person you were talking about that gets up every morning and thinks, and dreams about about this, is this something that would, again, be at the university, or where would this person be?
That is an excellent question, and that is one we have grappled with. At this point in time, that person is sitting to my left.
Okay.
And this was done through the consortium model. We had the consortium and the board of directors. We were a not-for-profit organization. Diane is our staff person, and that's been her job with the tech prep. And now we've pushed that envelope for her and us to broaden that. So right now it's her. Unfortunately, that program is coming to – that funding source is coming to an end in June. So to answer your question, we would still like to keep the same model or a similar model with a maybe not as big of a consortium, but still having representation from all those stakeholders, but having folks like Roxy Morant and others at the table is part of that advisory group guiding this process, and have Diane as the staff person to make this happen. And so that's our goal, that's our hope. And currently the way the model is the funds that come in from Carl Perkins comes through the Community and Technical College, where I work. We're the bank, because we were such a small nonprofit organization, we didn't have the financial capacity to handle hundreds thousands of dollars of grant funds.
And it was a requirement by the national level. Yeah,
okay.
It was a requirement.
That was before my time.
Had to have a fiscal agent. Yeah.
Okay, so we're the bank, basically. And but the consortium and the board and the strategic plan and this plan drives our work.
And I can, if I can add, I did have a number of conversations with Department of Education Commissioner Ledoux when he was in office. Where would the best places sit? Is it in the university? Is it in the Department of Education? Is it under AWEB? Because of that whole financial, we knew at some point Carl Perkins was going to come to an end or change or whatever. And all I can say is there are states out there that have been pretty creative. Some of their positions that have this kind of a these job duties are under Department of Education, and there's funding at the state level to help support the Department of Education's efforts. State of Delaware. I toot their horn a lot because we think a lot alike. They think about university, regional training centers, apprenticeship. They're keeping that student in the middle. And their state, 20 years ago, the legislature said, actually put policy in place and said the three main, you know, entities will work together with a, in that time it was called a Tech Prep Coordinator. You will develop the career pathways, and we'll put this much money, and we'll support. We'll basically match your Carl Perkins. So that was one other model out there. But, you know, in our state, we're still
figuring that out.
You know, where is this? You know, if we put it in Department of Ed, it has ramifications. If we put it under the university, it has ramifications. There's some advantage of leaving it outside, and there's some disadvantages, you know, when you're talking about building strong partnerships and, you know, what each partner brings to the table. So.
Okay. Well, very good. Anything else, Senator Thomas? I know you have finance at 9. So.
No finance this morning, but we have other things planned. But I do have just, Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer makes a good point. There are lots of organizations involved in doing this and trying to pull them all together, and they all have a little bit different responsibility or constituency or whatever. So I know that's difficult, but creating another one may not be the answer. Yet working with some of the others, and probably they just need a lot more coordination of what almost already exists would probably be a good idea. But I'm not suggesting that your area of responsibility and concern is not important. It is, and it may serve a little bit different look at things than is being taken now. But I would think that there is an opportunity for you folks to be successful if, in fact, somebody like the Alaska workforce people, and maybe there's room within them to work and do exactly what you're doing. I'm not sure, but it is going to become narrower. Money is going to become tighter. Creating new entities is going to be difficult, and even the university is being encouraged now by many that they need to narrow their focus somewhat, and by that I mean that they need to do their program assessments, mm-hmm. and that things that aren't working need to be shed and move forward, and that the duplication of classes due to distance delivery opportunities be narrowed. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be looking at that, because that is something when you see, now this doesn't sound very likely to impact what you're looking at, because you're looking at new careers opening up or expanding existing careers, expanding workforce needs of those folks, but that will be, I'm sure, the university of the future is going to be more distance education, because they're competing now with a lot of people from outside, a lot of universities from outside, online ones in particular, and they are going to be competing for funds, so they're going to have to let some things go. Probably not things that will affect your challenge, your responsibility, but they will be encouraged to cut back. And
right, and we do have a model in place. We have the consortium, we have the staff, we have a bank. So if we were to get some funding, if that was amenable to the funder, we would leave it as is, because we get the input from all the stakeholders in this model. So it works. It's currently working. So creating another entity, I agree with you, not a good idea mm-hmm. in these times. Mm-hmm. But having somebody that could continue to bring people together to link and leverage these funds, the reducing funds, people work well together and collaborate when the funds start to go away. And everybody brings a little piece to the table, sure. You know, that stone soup. Everybody brings something to the pot, and yeah. You have a bowl of soup.
Okay. We're good.
Thank you so much.
Well, great. Yeah, thank you for the presentation. Yes, we appreciate you guys coming back down and having a little more time to learn the program, because I know sometimes when you meet in our offices, it's rushed. So well, good. All right. Well, I think that is going to conclude our meeting for today. Our next meeting is Wednesday, actually, Monday being Seward's Day. I think we're still having session, but we're not going to have an education committee meeting. ICER is going to be presenting to us on Wednesday. It's actually the Center for Alaska Education Policy Research, known as CAPR, I guess, which is a division within ICER. And we're going to, they're going to present to us a proposal on, John, you'll be interested in this, on how to figure out how to uh, fund K-12 education through the foundation formula long-term, kind of like the task force we did one other time using the ICER study. So that should be interesting. And then after that, Commissioner Hanley is going to talk to us about Common Core standards. We heard from the mayor that they've opted to go with the national standards, and whereas I think last time we talked to the commissioner, he wanted to go with some local standards. So we're going to get a better clarification on that, and also we're waiting on bills to come over from House Education. Not sure what they're doing over there. But if they have some bills they want us to hear, they should be sending it over relatively soon. So with that, is there anything else, Senator Thomas?
No.
Again, thank our guests here for coming
thank
today.
You. Thank you.
Safe travels back. And with that, we're adjourned.